Good evening.
Good evening.
Hannah, are we starting at chapter 3 or section 3, section 8?
You know what? I don't know. I have my folder out, but I evidently, let's see. I know we've done chapter 3, section 6. 1, 2. I had flipped the handout over, so I'm not sure. I have start here on 119.17, so I don't know if we haven't. We haven't been having the class, so.
We haven't had a class since then.
Okay, well then I would think chapter 3, section 8. Maybe let me turn the page and see if I have another date. I usually say start here and stop here. I think that's where it is, but I could have closed it to mean go to the next handout. So
not
I
a problem. That's where we'll go and catch up. So please join me in saying the Ana B'Koach.
I'm going to mute.
Gedula Tshemincha Tatis Seura Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Taf Tzadi. The letters of the month of Shabbat, the Bet that created the planet Shabtai, the planet Saturn, and the Tzadi that created the constellation Zili, the water carrier. Some people say it's the water bucket. And the it's essentially the astrological sign of Aquarius. The Tzadi and the Bet have a gematria of 92, which is 91 plus the Kollel. So we are connecting to the unity of this spiritual and the physical worlds. Kaberina Amcha Sadzenu Kaharenu Nola Ufre Shayan Sintet Nun Nagibo Dorshe Yehud Fa Gevava Sham Lein Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin Barhem Tacharem Rachame Sikata Sami Sham Lein Betet Resh Tadi Taf Gimel Hasin Kadosh Biro Tufa Nae Adata Ket Kufet Ket Nunayan Yachid Geya Zamcha Pene Zofre Kiddushata Yud Gimelamet Hei Zayin Kuf Shabbatenu Kabel Ushma Tziyakatenu Yodea Talumo Shin Kufav Tzadi Yud Taf. Because we're out doing a physical class tonight, we're not able to connect to the various verses, but we can say the 13 attributes of mercy, which helps us to separate between the right column energy and the left column energy. Adonai Yohei Wahei. Adonai Yohei Wahei. El Rachum Vechanun. Erech Apaim. V'rav Chesed V'emet. Notzer Chesed La'alafim. Noseyahon Vafesha. And the verses that connect us to the energy of this year, 5777, when we take the one verse is Lamentations, chapter 3, verse 52, and when we take that verse, and we take the first letters from that verse, we're able to permute it into three Hebrew words. Tzatz ki ach, which translates as appear like brothers. And the tzaddikim that left today were not able to make the connection. So the eighth verse of the Anapakoa, we say in a whisper. And now we're going to read a verse from the Zohar, from the Parasha of Noah. We're going to read verse 242, and we'll start with the L'shem Yichud. Roshem Yichud Kudsha Berichu Ishkin Tevit Hilu Urchimu Udhilu Udhilu Urchimu Liakta L'Shem Yudhe Bavavhe B'Yichuda Shalim B'Shem Kol Yisrael Limud Torah Mitzvah La'asok Torah Mitzvah Vayihino Am Adonai Eloheinu Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kodanei Aleinu Ma'asei Yadeinu Kodaneihu Va'amar Rabbi Yosei Birkan la ishtakahu, ulvaltim ishtakahu, beha yamiku dekola, beha hu sitra, nafke mai fama, begin the Israel, la sharyan, biara vela palhe. Ulchana deitzerich ve'ad laka bot didim ulishtachacha tirkan uginka lamishtache ve'ela v'tata ve'alma layate v'kiyumeya itayot. Rabbi Yosef said that blessings cannot be found, but curses do exist, because sustenance is drawn from that side, namely from lighting the upper candle with the smoke that rises from the lower one. Why? Because the nation of Israel does not reside in the land of Israel and does not worship properly. To worship properly is to light the candle, to light the upper candle with the lower one, and to draw down the blessings to be passed on to the world. This is why there are no blessings above or below. Therefore, the world does not exist as it should. Does anyone have any questions? Yes, we're talking on the physical level. And this was written before the modern state of Israel, but there are some people who teach that the modern state of Israel is still in exile because it's not a Torah state. When there was a king in Israel, when King David, King Solomon, the other kings, there there was a king in Israel, and the government was ruled by the Sanhedrin, by King David, and by the priests in the temple. Those are the three levels of government that are needed for a government, for a state. The government now is in conflict. The modern state of Israel was set up in conflict. It was set up to be a nation like every other nation, and at the same time it was set up to be a Torah nation. And those are in conflict. The Orthodox communities are trying to make it a Torah nation, but there's a conflict within the Torah nations, because the Torah groups, because they're being led by rabbis who don't, come from, the root comes from the root of the souls of the rabbis in this generation come from the Arab Rav. Arab Rav is the mixed multitude, is the normal translation. So shall we start to read? We're reading today's handout can be found on the Yeshem website, the Revealed Wisdom Matrix in row 13. I believe it's 13, it may be 11. In the second row from the left, it's for the Advanced Reincarnations class. When you open that up and scroll down until you find class 6D, the second 6D, which starts with chapter 3, section 8. And it's titled The Nefesh, the Ruach, and the Neshama for a Slightly New Gilgul. Now we will explain what was mentioned at the beginning of the chapter. A secret of Gilgul, reincarnation, is that when the need is great, a slightly new Gilgul can achieve Nefesh, Ruach, and Neshama at one time in a single incarnation, without the need for multiple reincarnations, since the three of them will achieve Tikkun in one body. We're not being told what is defined as a great need, but one thought that I have as a personal thought: as we get closer in time, there's not sufficient time to do multiple reincarnations, and thus that might be considered a great need for the three levels of soul to be corrected in one lifetime. But here's the definition of what is a slightly new Gilgul. And this will be explained in depth later, especially in chapter 7. In brief, it refers to a person who has completed the tikkun of his nefesh, but not in his first Gilgul. Normally, such a person cannot rectify his ruach in the same Gilgul. He has to die and be reborn with his nefesh and his ruach together. However, there are special cases when the need is great that he can attain ruach and even neshama in the same gilgul in which his nefesh has been completed. This is possible even though it is not the first gilgul of the nefesh. Although it is not the first time his nefesh has been in this world, he has completed the tikkun of the nefesh. Therefore, the Arizal calls him a slightly new Gilgul, as will be explained in chapter 7. It is this that makes possible the attainment of all three parts of the soul, the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama in one gilgul. Normally, when the nefesh comes alone and achieves rectification and purification, the ruach cannot join it since the nefesh has been rectified, while the ruach has not. However, there is a way to achieve rectification together in the same gilgul when the nefesh is already completely rectified. When a person sleeps at night, he can deposit his nefesh with God as is known. Thus, it is possible for the nefesh to remain above, adhering to the supernal well, and in the secret of Mayim Nukvim, female waters. Literally, Mayim Nukvim is female waters. It refers here to the holy sparks that are sown throughout the levels and dimensions of creation. All of them, as was mentioned briefly in section 2 of this chapter. Our learning of Torah and performance of mitzvot liberate these holy sparks from the klipot that imprison them. Then the holy sparks ascend upward to reunite with the sources of spiritual light. When this happens, I cause the downward flow of additional light and blessing. Because they ascend from below to above, they are called female, since as in conjugal relations, the juices of the female flow from below to above, whereas the juices of the male flow from above to below. Indeed, all types of light that go from below to above, such as returning light, are also called female light. The classical abbreviation of Mayim Nukvim is Mem Nun, which we will refer to as Mayim Nukvim throughout this translation. These matters are known from the Sha'ar HaKifila in the section about going to sleep at night. And feel free to investigate this further there. Furthermore, the place for water is in a well, since there is a place in the supernal world called the supernal well. It is fitting that this nefesh that has been fully rectified and has ascended upward in the secret of Mayim Nukvim remain there in the supernal well. Consequently, the nefesh that has been completely rectified and has ascended as Mayim Nukvim to the supernal well does not descend in the morning when the souls return to this world. It will remain in the supernal well, and in its place, his ruach will descend. When he awakens in the morning, his ruach will then enter by itself as if reincarnated into a different body. This new situation will continue until it is rectified completely, at which point the nefesh will return into the body as before, since they both are now rectified. The ruach can be dressed within the nefesh, and the nefesh can be its bias. Once the ruach is also rectified like the nefesh, there is no hindrance to its becoming ensconced within the nefesh, and the nefesh becomes its vehicle. Likewise, after the ruach becomes completely purified, then both the nefesh and the ruach can leave the body at night, during sleep, and be deposited above, where they will remain for the time being. In the morning when he awakens, the neshama will enter into him. It will become rectified, and once rectification is complete, then the previously rectified nefesh and ruach can return. The three of them will join together in the same body, and one will become the vehicle for the others. No more reincarnations will be necessary. Thus, there is a possibility that a slightly new soul can achieve rectification of the nefesh, the neruach, and the neshama, even though it is not his first gilgul. This lesson now becomes the basis for a new esoteric exposition of the following verse. All of this is alluded to in the verse, "My nefesh has desired you at night. Even with my ruach that is within me will I seek you." The interpretation of this verse: my nefesh became purified until it was able to cling to you in the secret of and cling to him. It then desired you and yearned to cling to you. The time of desiring and yearning is specifically at night, when souls may be deposited because they are ascending, secret of Mayim Nitzim, to cause a supernal zivug. Since the time of yearning at night, it was written, "My nefesh has desired you at night." The word zivug used here literally means to pair, although union, and specifically conjugal union, would probably be a more accurate rendition. According to the meaning of the Kabbalah, by ascending to higher levels, the secret of mind is being, the holy sparks cause the upper parts of theme to unite together. Thus they draw light down from above to the lower levels. The strength of this yearning, because it is pure, makes possible total adherence. The nefesh can remain there and not descend. Thus, the first part of the verse has been explained. My nefesh has desired you at night, because that the night is the time of desire, when the souls ascend as Mayim Nitzim to the supernal well. In the morning, when it is time for the descent, then my nefesh does not descend, but my ruach in its place descends into my body to seek you. The Hebrew word that has been translated here to seek you is as shachrecha, the root of which is shachar, meaning morning. Thus, the second part of the verse will be rendered, "In the morning my ruach will enter into me in the place of my nefesh." In the morning, when it comes time for the nefesh to descend once again, and it does not, then my ruach can enter me instead. This is why it is not my nefesh that seeks for you in the morning. This is according to both meanings of Ahash, Ash Arecha. Rather, it is his ruach that enters him to become rectified. Therefore, the initial letters of the Hebrew words that have been translated in the night, my nefesh, even my ruach, Beit Aleph Resh, spells the ear. And in Hebrew, this is the Hebrew word for well. This alludes to what was mentioned earlier, that the nefesh longs to ascend to the supernal well. That these initial letters spell be'ir, meaning well, is an indication to the Rav that something is happening here in this verse that is taking place in the supernal well. And he has explained the verse accordingly. Now he wants to draw a practical application from what he has been expounding, this section, namely that this verse should be recited at night before going to sleep. Hence, if a person knows on his own that he has rectified his nefesh, he can say the verse, "My nefesh has desired you at night. Even with my ruach that is within me, will I seek you." In Hebrew, Asherecha, before laying down to sleep. He should recite it concentrating on the esoteric meaning that has been explained here in order to attain his ruach and similarly his neshama. Then he will not need additional gilgulim. Understand this esoteric secret well and be cautious with it. Indeed, in the prescribed recitation of the bedtime Shema in the prayer book of the Ari, at least according to the Ben Ish Chai, this verse appears and it is recited by everyone every night. There is another verse that is also recited each night in the recitation of the bedtime Shema. The reason for the recitation of the second verse is similar to what has been explained in this section, but not exactly. The Rav will now explain the differences between them and why both verses need to be recited. However, the verse that we are accustomed to say, "In your hand I will deposit my soul," doesn't help to accomplish what has been explained here. It only means that the nefesh will descend as a deposit. In the morning, it will return to descend. However, the verse, "My nefesh has desired you at night, even with my ruach that is within me will I seek," means that the nefesh will remain above and that either the ruach or the neshama will descend in its place. Note Shmuel Vital says, the verse, my nefesh has desired you at night. Even with my ruach that is within me will I seek for you. This is explained in Gate 6 of Sha'ar HaKavanot, and see there. It's the gate of intention. This is the end of Chapter 3, but I have a commentary. Do you know the difference between reincarnation, Gilgul, Yibum, the result of a man dying without a child, and the change associated with exchanging parts of the soul at night? This is all discussed in Chapter 3. Also discussed in Chapter 3 is the idea of the nefesh being on its own and always unified. And do you remember why this is necessary? Like a small test. We're now going to go to advanced class 6E. Which starts with chapter 4, section 1. And its title is, "When the Second Gilgul is Like the First." In this section, we will learn another way that all three levels of the soul, the nefesh, the ruach, and the neshama, may be received in one lifetime, even though it is not his first gilgul. There are two other distinctions that apply only to gilgulim. They apply only to gilgulim and not to yibur or yibum. The Gilgulim is reincarnation. The Ibur is a soul, a righteous soul, that comes to help the reincarnated soul.
Ibur is
pregnant.
What?
Yes.
Right.
Soul.
It's pregnant.
Pregnant with the I be, the righteous person? And the Yibum is a soul that died without leaving children, and so it has a separate process. Firstly, if a first-time Gilgul earns his nefesh, ruach and neshama, and then sins and blemishes them in his next reincarnation, he cannot rectify them all at once, except through the device that was explained beforehand, the saying of a particular verse prior to sleep. When going to bed, he should recite the verse, "My nefesh has desired you at night," etc. And this was explained at the end of the last chapter. The two distinctions mentioned here are made possible by entirely different circumstances, depending upon what happened during the first Gilgul. Either he earned all his nefesh, ruach, and neshama during the first Gilgul before he sinned, as in the first possibility that we have just read, or he earned only his nefesh before he sinned in the first Gilgul, which is the second possibility that will be explained here. In the first possibility, he cannot receive all his nefesh, ruach, and neshama in the second Gilgul, except through the device of reciting the verse, "My nefesh has desired you at night," as was explained at the end of the last chapter. Then his nefesh will remain above in the eternal well, and in the morning his ruach will come down in its place. Now the rabbi will explain the second possible way of achieving all three levels of soul in a second Gilgul. Secondly, if a first-time Gilgul earns only his nefesh and sins and blemishes it, when he reincarnates, he can achieve nefesh in ruach and neshama in that Gilgul itself. Since he had not previously damaged his ruach and his neshama, they can join the nefesh after it has been rectified, as if it were a first incarnation, just as it said, if he merits more. In his first Gilgul, he rectified his nefesh that he received at birth, and he never received either his ruach or neshama before sinning and dying. The ruach and neshama were never affected. In his first Gilgul, he received the nefesh that he received at birth. He rectified the nefesh that he received at birth. And he never received either his ruach or his neshama before sinning and dying. The ruach and the neshama were never affected by the sins he did with his nefesh. If he rectifies his nefesh after reincarnating with it, then the ruach can come to him in the same body, since it was never damaged. If he merits completing his ruach as well, then his neshama can join them both, both his nefesh and his ruach, the same body, even though it is his second reincarnation. This is possible because the ruach and neshama can join both his nefesh and his ruach in the same body, even though it is his second reincarnation. This is possible because the ruach and neshama were not previously blemished. Otherwise, each must come back in its own Gilgul, as we have said until now. How can a rectified nefesh become the vehicle for a damaged ruach or a neshama? This is not the case when they have all come and all have become blemished. For how can a rectified nefesh become the vehicle for a damaged ruach or neshama? However, if he only damaged the nefesh, then all three can return together in a single Gilgul. My commentary. For Gilgulim only, the first Gilgul, the nefesh does not rectify completely. There may be a second Gilgul. The nefesh does not rectify completely. The ruach comes and sin happens. There will be a second Gilgul with a nefesh from a ger. The nefesh does not rectify completely. Sin happens. The nefesh completes rectification. The ruach comes without the second Gilgul by saying the prayer. The nefesh ruach neshama is received, then there is a sin. Neshama is affected by the sin. Rectification may happen in the first Gilgul, along with possible saying the prayer as above. That's the end of section one. Are there any questions?
Prayer.
Yes. Yes, but it applies to the ruach and the neshama.
What's this?
Spirit or wind.
And I know neshama. What is it?
Animal soul. Rectifying the Soul, Chapter 4, Section 2. It seems to me that all the aspects of rectification are really the fulfillment of mitzvot, which are dependent upon the limbs of the nefesh. All blemishes result from violating negative mitzvot. It is well known that there are 248 positive mitzvot and 365 negative mitzvot. The negative mitzvot tell us what not to do. Their number corresponds to the 248 limbs of the human body, which is made in the image of the nefesh. Thus, each one of the negative mitzvot corresponds to one of the limbs of the nefesh. And transgression of any one of them causes a corresponding blemish or damage in one of the limbs of the nefesh. Positive mitzvot, on the other hand, require a person to actively do something. They cause rectification of the nefesh. The complete entry of the nefesh into the body, which is called the tikkun of the nefesh, is accomplished only through the performance of mitzvot. Although sins blemish and the nefesh, they do not prevent its sparks from entering. A person can perform positive mitzvot and in the same lifetime transgress negative precepts. As a result of the positive mitzvot, he will be rectifying levels of soul, one after the other. The sparks of the nefesh will be entering the body and becoming rectified. On the other hand, as a result of the negative mitzvot that he has transgressed, he will have caused blemish or damage. These will have to be atoned for, one way or the other. But they do not necessarily prevent the progress of the truth. Like 365. I commentate. This is very important to understand. Blemishes come from doing a do-not mitzvah. Rectification is made by performing a to-do mitzvah. When one looks at the list of mitzvot, there are many mitzvot that are in both columns. There is both a do mitzvah and a do-not mitzvah. And one example is Shabbat. Keep Shabbat and do not abrogate Shabbat, break Shabbat. Let's take an example that a person violated guarding the Shabbat, which is a do-not mitzvah. Let's say they watch TV on Shabbat by turning on the TV. This damaged their eyes, their fingers, their buttocks, and many other parts of their body. How is this corrected? By keeping the mitzvah of Shabbat. They will have the same desire, and they will do binding by striking and not turn the TV on. This will correct the blemish. Let us say they watch TV for 20 years in a row. Every Shabbat, they need to keep 20 years of Shabbatot. We do not yet have that answer. It is up to Hashem as a Bet Din that rules when he passes. It may take a one Shabbat or a few Shabbats or 20 years, depending on the strength of the evil inclination to turn on the TV. The language that is used in this section varies and seems to imply different words for the same thing. The words are blemish, atoned, coming, and rectified. The term tikkun of the nefesh refers to the entry of the nefesh into the body.
Okay.
Yes. This implies that there are separate steps in this process of the nefesh entering the body. Although it is not clear in the way this section is translated, let me try and clear all of this up. The level of the soul called nefesh is not one complete unity. There are 613 parts of the nefesh, which do not have to enter the body at the same time. There is also a process for the parts of the nefesh moving into the body. The Torah uses the word nefesh is in the blood. The blood is composed of two parts, the red and the white parts. This represents the right and left columns, and therefore the blood is the central column of the body. This is due to the blood having both columns within it. Let us say the heart component of the nefesh is the body. How it gets to the heart is not expressed in this text, and the metaphor is not explained yet. This leads to a lot of misunderstanding of how this all works. As we grow in our understanding, hopefully, it will become clear. This is one of the reasons that the Kabbalists tell us to read a book once and then reread it again, as if we had not read it before. We will be able to understand much more of the book from the first reading during the second reading. Section 3, Reincarnation and Resurrection. However, there are two other aspects regarding this matter. The first aspect concerns a person who only received a nefesh during his first lifetime, but didn't merit to completely rectify it, and then died. Since the first body did not complete the rectification of all aspects of the nefesh, then at the time of the resurrection of the dead, only those parts that were rectified in the lifetime of that body returned with it. Resurrection of the dead is a fundamental principle of Judaism, since the body participated in the performance of mitzvot. It is only just that it should also share in the eternal reward for that performance. Therefore, that body too comes back to life in the time of the resurrection of the dead, together with those parts of the soul that were rectified during its lifetime. When this particular reincarnation resurrects, it receives only those sparks that were rectified through it. The other parts of the nefesh return to the other bodies wherein they were rectified. Therefore, when this nefesh reincarnates into another body to complete its tikkun, it can achieve nefesh, ruach, and neshama. This is done by saying the prayer as described above and in the last class. And in chapter 4, section 1, we have the second possibility. When the nefesh is completed in the second gugul, it can become a vehicle for the unblemished ruach and neshama. In this respect, it is like a first-time gugul. However, what concerns us here is not the possibility that all three parts of the soul can be received in the second gugul, but what happens in the time of the resurrection to the body of the first gilgul that has rectified only a few parts of the nefesh. Then all the parts of the nefesh that were rectified in the second body, together with the ruach and the neshama, belong to the second body at the time of the resurrection. It was in the second body that the remainder of the nefesh, ruach, and neshama were rectified. The first body has no portion in the ruach and neshama, but it does have a share in part of the nefesh, the part that was rectified with it. The remainder of the aspects of the rectified soul belongs to the second body. The rule is that the body of each person will be resurrected with those parts of the soul that were rectified in its lifetime. If only a few parts of nefesh were rectified by the person of the first gilgul, then those few parts that amount to nothing more than a minimal nefesh will be all that is available for the resurrection of the first body. The rabbis will now draw a comparison between the minimal nefesh and the minimal nefesh that we learned about in the case of the Yibum. This is like what was explained in Saba of Mishpatim regarding Yibum. The first body did not succeed at procreating. It only merits the individual spark of the nefesh. This is the spark that was left inside the woman during the first intimacy. However, the rest of the nefesh with the ruach and the neshama belong to the second body. We learned about Yibum in chapter 3, section 6. Yibum occurs when a person dies without leaving children in this world, and it is considered a lack of success to the extent that it is as if the body never came into the world. The entire nefesh that was in the first body reincarnates to a second body, And in the time of the resurrection, it will arise with the second body. Only a minimal spirit called the spirit that the husband left within his wife is available for the resurrection of the first body. The rabbi is comparing that minimal spirit that was left within the woman to what is discussed here, namely the few parts of the nephesh that were rectified in the first Gilgul, in both cases in Yibum, and in the case discussed here, the rest of the nefesh and the ruach and the neshama belong to the second body that will arise at the time of resurrection. There is an additional basis to the comparison. Between our case, when only a few parts of the nefesh are rectified in the first Gilgul, and that of Yibum, when no progeny were left in the world. In our case, as well as Yibum, the nefesh is not bearing any fruit. In our case, this is because it has no part in any ruach or neshama. They belong to the body of another Gilgul. This is the secret of what is written in the Zohar. Those bodies that were not successful are as if they never existed. This is successful area. Those bodies that were not successful are as if they never existed. And this is remarkable because it is known that there is no Jew who is not filled with mitzvot, like a pomegranate. Why should an unsuccessful body be non-existent at the time of the resurrection? The pomegranate is a fruit that is full of the seed. Indeed, some say that the original pomegranate had 613 seeds. Corresponding to the number of positive and negative mitzvot in the Torah. The sages used it to symbolize the internal condition of the Jewish people. They declared, even the empty ones among you are filled with mitzvot like a pomegranate. When a Jew does a mitzvah, he connects to and participates in all the mitzvot that were ever done throughout history. Thus, even the most significant of them is filled with mitzvot like a pomegranate. How then can there be a body that has no part in mitzvot to justify its resurrection? However, this alludes to the idea that the main source of pleasure in the world that is coming is on the level of ruach and neshama. This first body does not even have a completed nefesh. All it has is the spark left in his wife by the initial intimacy. Thus, it has no pleasure, and it is as if it doesn't exist. This person's participation in some bit of the ecstasy of the world to come is proven by the statement of the Saba in Zohar Mishpatim. My commentary. The section referred to above as Sulam 112 runs to 119. In it, he explains how the original man is resurrected from the reshima, the impression left in the womb of his wife during Zivug. This allows him to return to the world in another body, which may finish the correction. Both bodies will resurrect, yet the first man will not have complete nefesh. One of the tasks that will need to be completed during the period of the resurrection will be the unification of the nefesh from the two bodies. That is not discussed, yet hinted at, since it belongs to the period after the Mashiach. Suffice it to say that there will be different energy levels in the various bodies of people after the resurrection, and it only takes one part of the nefesh to activate a body. Thus, at least, only takes one part of a nefesh to activate a body. This is, at least, is my opinion, as I have not read this anywhere yet. I have seen hints in various sections of the Zohar. We are out of time. Does anybody have any questions? There's a process, so the resurrection may come before the Mashiach.
No. I remember talking about when a body is resurrected, or soul body is resurrected, you could see in your 20s.
Yes. The body would be in its 20s. The soul is lifetime.
Right. But if you had several bodies.
Yes. That's what we were just discussing.
Okay.
The idea of the first body and the second body.
Yeah.
If the first body corrected the nefesh in its first lifetime, then it sinned after that. The nefesh isn't affected, but whatever the ruach or the neshama that has come into that body becomes affected by those sins. And so the sections of the ruach or the neshama that were corrected before the sin resurrect with the nefesh in the first body. And then in a second body, when the ruach and the neshama is corrected, they will be in that body. They will activate the second body. Yeah, relatively speaking. Now, if the nefesh has not been rectified, therefore, there's no ruach and neshama. So the first body, whatever aspects of that resurrection, whatever aspects of that corrected nefesh, will activate the first body. Whereas the rest of the three parts of the soul will activate the second body. That's what we just went over. And yes, I realize it's complicated. Yes. Correct. Any questions on the conference call?
Hanok, does the person have a sense of these happenings at night or the next morning?
Are you asking if a person knows where he is in this process of first body or second body?
Yes, I suppose.
Is that what you're asking?
Well, I'm just wondering if a person is aware, let's say that the neshama came down or the ruach came down. But the nefesh stayed up.
To some people, yes. Remember we had discussions of why someone changes their name?
Oh, yes. Okay.
Because certain aspects of their various levels of soul have corrected, and now they're no longer the same person where that name applies.
Okay.
Any other questions, or do I need to go into that in more detail?
Well, is there, I think, I kind of lost my train of thought. Oh, well, I lost it. It'll come back sometime.
It'll come back, and if you want to bring it up in any of the Wednesday classes, we can do it then.
Okay.
All right. So our next class, I don't know, you said you might not be there for the Zohar class.
Really. Okay.
I'm sorry.
I've been up since 3 this morning, and we've been to 2 doctors today, and oh gosh, you know. So if I can still wake, I'll be up. I'll be on.
Understand.
Okay.
Well, I hope Tony is getting better.
Well, it's just aggravating for him, and it doesn't look like they're going to be able to do anything. That it's a wait and see. But I think there was a link here in this lesson, so I'm going to let him go read it.
Very good.
And see if ministers to him or means something to him.
Understand. Okay. I'll speak to you soon.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Shabbat shalom to all.